Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
12:03, Wednesday, June 19th, 2024. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on this Juneteenth and the WBBM Noon Business Hour. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. The markets are closed on this Juneteenth holiday, but still plenty to get into on the Noon Business Hour, and we will dive right in. Fans and bar owners are suing the NFL over the league's Sunday ticket package. We'll talk about that in our next segment. But right now, home builders say they have growing concerns about the housing market and the overall economy. Joining us now to talk about both the national and local housing landscape is Drew Wishover, founder and owner of Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Drew, thanks for being with us on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so home builder sentiment came in quite soft today. What are some of the concerns that we're hearing about so far?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Andy. I think what we're seeing here again is this, you know, as these interest rates stay where they're at and the lack of inventory kind of really being the problem out there, is it's just putting the builders in this place of, you know, it's forcing them to make a move and do something, whether they cut home prices, whether they offer incentives. It's just been a really difficult, you know, time for them to navigate through some of this right now.
How are things looking locally, Drew, for those in the Chicago area looking to start some new construction? Are things maybe more positive than the national level, or how are we looking?
Well, I think what we've seen here is that there are a lot of the builders right now are offering the incentives to the buyers. They're working with the lenders to kind of negotiate some of the rates. They're maybe giving some more opportunities, but they're also struggling because the cost for building is up, and then the absolute opportunities that are, you know, out there for them to find lots that are buildable and developable. It's really been a struggle all the way around for this thing right now.
Drew, we hear a lot about a supply shortage in the housing market. Curious kind of how that factors into home prices and maybe how that factors in specifically here in the Chicago market.
Sure. I mean, as the supply is down, what that does is it just increases these prices. The increase of the home prices has been on the rise for the period of time that they haven't dropped these interest rates. So how that is now impacting the buyers, they're sitting off there on the sidelines going, I think we're going to wait. I think we're going to kind of hold off to see what happens with some of these interest rates and not really make any moves. So it's impacting inventory, and it is impacting the prices of these homes that people are trying to buy.
Drew, you mentioned kind of the home buyers and how they factor in here. What is the advice for those who maybe are kind of watching this all play out and maybe, you know, thinking about pulling the trigger on a new home at some point? Is it safe to kind of sit this one out, or what would you say to those who are looking to make that jump?
Well, it's a great question because, you know, sitting it out is not going to be a benefit, because all it's going to do is, you know, the pricing is going to increase as we get closer to kids going back to school and things. So maybe an opportunity would be for them to expand their search area, you know, look outside of the neighborhoods that you know, were really targeting. And then look beyond those perfect listings. Maybe there's the house that you can fix up and, you know, put a little touch on it and get it at a reduced rate instead of finding that perfect house that is already done and cosmetically fixed.
Drew, before we let you go here, your thoughts on kind of the housing market nationally and locally here for the rest of 2024. Obviously, again, things looking bleak right now. Where do you see things kind of going here in the months to come?
Well, I think that my hope and conversation is that there may still be a, you know, decrease in the interest rates. I think that they have to really impact that to help stimulate the number of homes that are available. The inventory has got to increase somehow, some way. So I think that that's going to be a concentration that is going to be really interesting to follow and watch, especially as we get close to this being an election year in the, you know, coming months in the third and fourth quarter.
Really helpful stuff as always. Thanks so much, Drew Wishover, founder and owner of Inspired Title Group in Chicago. Coming up, the NFL facing legal action over its Sunday ticket package of games.
Compounding your interest with an economy of words. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A class action lawsuit targets the NFL for its Sunday ticket broadcast package. Let's get the details now from Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, and regular contributor to our sister station, 670 The Score. He was actually on there about an hour ago at Odyssey Double Dip for Mike today, who is also the author of the book Playmakers, how the NFL really works. Mike, thanks for being with us today. So let's dive right in. You know, maybe Bears fans locally are more focused on Caleb Williams and the Bears, gearing up for the season right now. Maybe they're not familiar with this lawsuit. What are the main allegations here? What should people know regarding a Sunday Ticket?
Well, this thing has been lingering for 9 years. It's currently in trial. There could be a verdict by next week. And what people need to know is, number one, you could hear about a fairly sizable award against the NFL for overpricing Sunday Ticket over the years to protect the CBS and Fox free over-the-air broadcast. The NFL is accused of deliberately requiring the price to be high so that more people will just watch whatever is on their local affiliates instead of opting to see out-of-market games. And they've marketed it for years as, for example, Packers fans in Pittsburgh can watch Green Bay games, and if it's really expensive to do that, okay, fine, I'll just watch what my local affiliate has. So that's the gist of it. It does have the potential to revolutionize the way that games are made available to consumers if the NFL should lose. Just yesterday, the judge made it clear to the plaintiff's lawyers that he's not a fan of the case, and he doesn't agree with how they've gone about presenting it, and he thinks they've overcomplicated it, and he reserves the right to direct a verdict for the NFL regardless of what the jury does. So a lot's going to happen over the course of the next week or so, and how this goes could shape the way that we all consume NFL games, especially that out-of-market option, which has been very expensive for years, and you have to buy the whole thing. Maybe it gets cheaper, and maybe we have the right, ultimately, to buy it one team at a time.
Mike, I'm curious, too, what role kind of the concept of antitrust law plays in here when you kind of talk about these allegations against the NFL?
Well, the NFL, even though it is thought of as one single sports league, it is 32 separate businesses who are technically in competition in a variety of ways. And those 32 independent businesses cannot come together and engage in price fixing or other things that would be adverse to the spirit of competition. The issue here is the NFL has had since 1961 a broadcast antitrust exemption that allows it to go to CBS, Fox, NBC, ABC, and sell the games as one bulk unit, not one team at a time, like Notre Dame does, for example. And one of the arguments the NFL is making in this case is that the Sunday Ticket package is an extension of that exemption, and the NFL should be allowed to engage in antitrust type behavior when it comes to saying, for example, hey, DirecTV, this is the price you must charge for Sunday Ticket because we're trying to make sure that a lot of people just choose to watch the games on Fox and CBS. So that's one of the legal issues that's going to get resolved in this case. Does the antitrust exemption that has allowed the NFL to sell all of its games as a league to the various networks for 60 years, does that apply to Sunday Ticket?
Mike, quickly, before we let you go, you mentioned perhaps a ruling against the NFL here. Any chance that they take action, maybe a lawsuit, something like that, if they are ruled against here?
Well, what they would do is appeal and appeal and appeal, and ultimately it could end up before the U.S. Supreme Court. And the way the U.S. Supreme Court is currently constituted, the NFL would have confidence that they would get at least 5 of the 9 justices to rule in their favor if they clear the bigger hurdle, which is getting the Supreme Court to even take the case in the first place. The Supreme Court takes on a very, very small percentage of the cases that are presented to it every year.
Great stuff. Really insightful stuff. Thanks so much. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, NBC Sports, contributor to 670 The Score, and author of the book Playmakers, How the NFL Really Works. Up next, if you're about to start looking for a used car, you might have great timing.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Well, the next 2 months could be the sweet spot for buying that used car. Let's find out why from Matt Jones, spokesman with TrueCar. Matt, thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour today. All right, so apparently the next few months are the perfect time to pull the trigger on that used car. Why is that?
Well, you know, things are finally lining up for new car buyers. Prices for new cars are dropping. Incentives are coming back. We're starting to see some cheap interest rates, which have really been missing from automotive for the past, 2.5 years. So what's good for the new car buyer also translates to the used car buyer, because as new cars get, you know, downward price pressure, used car pricing has to adjust and keep up. So discounts are going to be a little bit heavier than what we've seen.
What is your advice for those who are in the market for a used car? Other ways they can kind of capitalize on this opportunity to really get their bang for their buck?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we take a step back first and consider who is buying cars right now. And if we look at the average car buyer, they haven't bought a car in about 7 years. You know, the average car on the road is about 12 years old. And so I think what we need to first assess is, hey, how are things different now than when they were the last time I bought a car? You know, so we've seen some people who have been, you know, tremendously brand loyal in the past for the past 20, 30 years. But that's changing over the past couple of years as different brands become better. Their warranties become longer. So the first thing I would say is, hey, even if you've got your mind on a particular brand, open up that aperture a little bit and maybe just look around and see what else is out there, because you might be able to find exactly what you need with a brand that you haven't had before, but it can save you some big bucks.
I'm curious, Matt, you mentioned kind of brand loyalty there. Are there any types of models or cars that tend to be a better value at times like this, or any maybe, you know, models that people should maybe steer clear of?
Well, right now we're seeing a little bit of softening in the heavy truck market, like prices are discounting. And it makes sense because they're, you know, the big trucks are more expensive, so they have more room to drop. So people can find some big deals on that, on like, you know, the trucks that we're familiar with that run the country. Also, right now is a great time to look at an EV, whether it's new or pre-owned. There's some fantastic discounts. And then if you couple that with municipal, state, or federal incentives that might be available, those are some great deals. But also, I think the thing that we need to think about is seasonality. As we start getting into the end of the year or end of the summer, that's when people start buying minivans for going back to school and for road trips and things like that. Stay away from the cars that are super hot right now, like the sports cars, the convertibles, and get to the things that are out of season, just kind of like what you do when you shop for clothes.
Matt, one last question for you. From your perspective, obviously it's a great time for those in the market to buy cars. What is it like to be on the other side of that and in the car business?
Oh my gosh, that's probably the best question I'm going to get this week. Well, for a lot of us people who've been in the business for, 20 some odd years, it's kind of a return to what we've been used to, where you don't just sell because you have the product in stock. You got to sell because you really got to meet the customer's needs. So there's a lot of training going on. I think the salesmanship and the experience that customers are getting is they're demanding something better than they've had for the past 2 years. So I think it's actually better for everybody involved right now. Sellers have to be on top of their game. They have to offer better service than they have in the past couple of years. And buyers have a more complete market as far as vehicles and pricing incentives. So I think it's actually, this is one of those times where it's a win-win for everybody.
Great stuff. Thanks so much. Matt Jones, spokesman for True Car. Still ahead on Personal Finance Wednesday, why more wealthy young people are investing in non-traditional assets.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Andy Dane in for Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Police look for a gunman in the shooting death of a young boy on Chicago's Near West Side. A dangerous dome of heat covering much of the country. In Personal Finance Wednesday, more millennials and other younger investors are putting their money into items like jewelry, fine wine, and gym shoes, and the possibility of a four-day work week being considered by more employers. Sports: Cubs hosting the Giants at Wrigley Field this afternoon. The White Sox take on the Astros on the south side tonight. No activity on Wall Street today. The markets are closed in observance of Juneteenth. AccuWeather says some clouds and sunshine today. Hot and humid. Could see some thunderstorms. A high 95 and real feels close to 100. Right now, sunny, 89 degrees at 12:31. Chicago police looking for a suspect in the deadly shooting of a 7-year-old boy on the Near West Side yesterday afternoon. At around 3 o'clock, Jaimani Amir Rivera was hit in the chest by a bullet at the Oakley Square apartment on West Jackson. Chicago Police Superintendent Larry Snelling.
We are losing our children, and we really need to think about the gun violence that's going on in this city. And we all need to step up to try to fight this type of gun violence to save our children.
Investigators say the child was not the intended target. Well, dangerous heat is impacting large sections of the country.
More than 88 million people are under heat alerts through the weekend in the Northeast and Midwest, says National Weather Service meteorologist Mark Chouinard.
Pretty large number under some type of heat advisory or warning.
From Washington, D.C. to Maine, he says there will be record-breaking heat for this early in the season.
Well into the 90s across a large portion of the northeast part of the country.
Chouinard says the heat index will make it feel even hotter, and the southwest will also feel the burn.
Phoenix, for example, should get up to, say, 113 over the coming days.
He says the heat will be on full blast through at least Saturday, with daily record highs likely. I'm Julie Walker.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Markets are closed for the Juneteenth holiday, but there is still plenty to talk about as investors brace for a potential surge in end-of-week trading. We now welcome in J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America and president of Tasty Trade. J.J., thanks for being with us on the Noon Business Hour today. Tech markets continue to lead higher. Any concerns right now maybe about that narrow leadership in your eyes?
Well, I do think that you have to be a bit concerned when the leadership of the market comes down to four or five stocks, which is basically what we're seeing right now, and an incredible outperformance. The encouraging thing, though, Andy, is that although they are the leaders, we are starting to see our clients on our Tasty Trade side trade more names. And this is something that's usually really healthy as markets go up. You know, when we go down, people trade more indices and are more afraid to trade the individual names as we go up. Yes, of course, NVIDIA, Apple, obviously the stocks leading the way, but you're seeing people trade other stocks, you know, the GEs of the world, JP Morgan's, et cetera. So they are willing to venture out a little bit also with names. And I think that's really healthy for the market overall. It's just that, you know, the 3 to 5 names that continue to lead us higher have just been so incredible in terms of their leadership.
So some encouraging indications there, JJ, but in your eyes, what's maybe one of the biggest threats to stocks as a whole right now?
Well, I think a couple of things. Number one, you know, this is obviously a very odd week with a holiday in the middle of the week and a triple witching hour following on Friday. We just really don't have these situations in the way the calendar fell this year, you know, pretty odd. But all that said, you know, as the Mike Tyson quote is, the punch you don't see that knocks you out. And it's really been the things we can see. Everything relies on interest rates. And I think that we are in the situation where people are still so interest rate dependent and hopeful that we get a rate cut this year. I think the thing that really, will keep that from happening and maybe keep the market back is if we continue with inflationary numbers and we even start to talk rate cut and rate hike. And you've seen that some of the Fed governors in the last couple of meetings have started their change their tune a little bit about the rate cut possibilities. And again, inflationary pressure really keeps the rate cut conversation at a minimum.
JJ, on a more positive side, any markets of the areas of the market that is that you're seeing some really high value in right now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as we talked about a couple of times, tech being the one that's absolutely leading everything overall. But as I look at the different sectors at the moment, I think the one that may be a little bit underrated because of what you and I just talked about are the financials. And the reason I say that is because we could continue, again, higher for longer with these higher rates, and they're the most direct beneficiaries of this because they can keep a larger spread between what they pay out and what they're taking in terms of loans. And, you know, it's funny, the financials have done so well and the traditional banking function has really only been back for about a year and a half. They've had to find other ways through fees, et cetera, to make money. So if they can continue with the ways they were making money when rates were basically zero and for, you know, go back to the traditional banking function of making money for a longer period of time, that will help them as we continue longer.
Thanks so much for joining us here on the Noon Business Hour. That is J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America and president of Tasty Trade. Up next in personal finance, Wednesday, taking a non-traditional path to investing.
The only program dedicated to currency events. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
A recent survey shows wealthy young people prefer investing in things like jewelry, sneakers, and wine over traditional assets. Joining us to discuss why this might not be the best strategy for most is Ed Jurtson, certified financial planner and founder of Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Ed, thanks for being with us on the Noon Business Hour today. All right, so take us into the minds of these young investors. Why exactly are more and more of them favoring some of these kind of non-traditional asset classes?
Cool. Great to be with you, Andy. You know, your listeners are most likely familiar with collectibles, such as like fine art, antique cars, coins, and sports memorabilia. But this younger generation is really making a push in this space. And so for potentially good reasons, because you don't want to discount this asset class. So there are collectibles that have gone up appreciably in value. And again, like fine art, where people pay hundreds of millions of dollars, this next generation is kind of potentially seeing the benefit of having a portion of their portfolio in this asset class.
On the other side of that, Ed, what are some of the risks and the potential downsides of investing in things like that?
Yeah, excellent point, Andy. The biggest thing is to avoid sort of the push of, if you would, most people getting into this. You look at prices of some of these collectibles, such as watches during COVID, and a lot of these prices have peaked during COVID because we're all kind of sitting around wondering what to do, and then you have the inevitable fall in prices. So, you know, one thing to really be appreciative of is just the natural rise and fall, just like stocks and these collectibles, but these tend to be more cyclical in regards to that approach. So again, just because you buy something today, realize that it may go up in value over time and it may not. So that's something to be aware of. Don't just jump into something because it's hot at this current time.
That's a great piece of advice. I'm curious, Ed, too, just other pieces of advice for the young investors out there looking to build long-term wealth. Maybe the idea of investing in jewelry or wine or something like that is appealing to them. You talk about some of the risks there, but what other advice do you have for the young investor?
Yeah, so a big thing is online market sites like StockX, Goat, Fight Club, that provides this platform, right, for buying and selling, and those are well established. So again, your listeners really need to be aware of the fact that these aren't regulated exchanges like stocks and like bonds. So you have to be really careful of understanding who you're working with. So if there's a deal out there that's too good to be true on some off-site, realize that it might be counterfeit. I mean, we hear time to time stories about fine art painting and people paying millions of dollars only to find out it's a counterfeit. So be very careful and selective of who you work with. The other side is there's brick and mortar stores around the Chicagoland area that also allow you to enjoy these collectibles. But again, know the retailers you're working with, again, to make sure that they're legitimate and they're looking out for your best interest.
Really helpful stuff, as always. Thanks so much. Ed Jurtzen, certified financial planner and founder of Engage Wealth Group in Chicago. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, would you be interested in a four-day work week? Well, stay with us.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Well, the four-day work week has been a simmering topic for a number of years now. Let's see if the heat is being turned up with Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Rick, thanks for being with us here on the Noon Business Hour. All right, so it did feel like a four-day work week was a fantasy at one point for many in the workforce. It is now gaining a lot of traction. How are you seeing kind of the conversation and the possibility in your eyes here?
Sure. There's a lot of early adopters. One of the things that we've known for a long time is that just because people are in an office for 40 or 50 hours doesn't mean they're doing work all the time. There's a lot of people that are idly at the water cooler, Candy Crush, you name it. So this is not about working fewer hours. This is actually about being more productive and working smarter. And the benefit of that on the other side for those companies that manage it is their people are typically just as productive in a shorter period of time, waste less energy and effort, and they're more energized, more engaged with their work.
What are some of the pushback maybe that you'll hear from employers about what this could mean for, I mean, you know, I feel like we hear a lot, companies will say, well, that will take a hit on maybe workplace productivity. It feels like maybe those on the other side say the opposite. What's kind of the stance of maybe the workforces that are against something like this?
Yeah, I think that tends to be, what is it, Max Planck said, progresses by funeral. You know, we've got senior management who, this is the way I did it, so this is the way it's got to be. I'm not saying they're wrong about everything, but what I am saying is that what we have to do at work now involves a lot more thinking and analytics than just going around to a file cabinet, pulling out the papers, finding the file, and then sitting down and opening up and leafing through the papers. People who have tech jobs or data-intense jobs, nobody can work the kinds of hours that they used to work when most of your activity is thinking. It's just not possible. So if you understand that and embrace that as a reality, the pushback of, you know, well, just try it. Okay, let's try, run an experiment, run 5 months, run one department. There's some things that you have to figure out in terms of how the logistics of it is. Does everybody doesn't take the same day off? Some people take Monday, some people take Friday. There are times when productivity isn't where it's supposed to be, and this gift day has to be rescinded until the numbers improve. But just saying, no, I'm not going to do it because it's new and it doesn't make any sense. We've already proven that didn't work in COVID.
And Rick, one last question for you, for those who are maybe listening and crossing their fingers here. Are there any industries maybe most apt to give this a shot?
Yeah, well, I think it's the smaller companies. The bigger companies, just like a big ship, it's harder for them to change course. And so they have public exposure in terms of Wall Street and the shareholder value. So smaller companies that are in the professional services environment and technology companies are more inclined to do this because they already have some sort of a work from home or hybrid model that's given them an indication that people don't have to be in their cubicle in order to be productive.
Great stuff. I know a lot of people are crossing their fingers that this comes to a workplace near them. So we will see. Great stuff as always. Rick Cobb, founder of the workplace consulting firm To Discern in Chicago. Hey, if you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour, we will have the replay podcast available shortly at WBBMNewsRadio.com as well as the Odyssey app.